You're listening to the Empty Stringers podcast, where every week we talk about locating, catching, and the conservation of redfish. My hope is to share with you what I'm seeing from the polling platform so that together we can catch more fish. Think of it as your weekly fishing report. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Matt Parrish. We got a lot to talk about. Forgive me, I'm drinking a cold beer right now. I'm in celebratory mode because I finished the plumbing today at the Baytown house. All thanks to my good buddy, Ellis, who is hopefully out there listening. I did all the things except when the butcher block countertops go in next week, I will put in the sink faucet. But other than that, I have everything in working order as far as plumbing goes, which was not that big of a task for a plumber. It's a pretty big task for me because I'm an electrician and a fishing guide and a business owner, not a plumber. So got that done. Things are looking up. I measured for blinds today. And what else did I do? That was about it, I think. We're moving along, and things are looking up. So last week, went fishing with my buddy Chris, and lo and behold, we found out that the spring pattern is in full force. The redfish are schooling under birds, and there's a bunch of little shrimp in the marsh. Now, we had a decently high tide, and we had fairly low wind. And what I do in the early spring pattern when I'm waiting on it to kick off is I frequent places that are deep funnels into the marsh. And I draw a line from those places straight to the back of the marsh, and that's where I go. Because that's usually where that kind of schooling activity takes place. My theory is that just all that water pushing through, there's a bunch of shrimp being pushed through up into the marshes. I think some shrimp are hatching back there in the marshes, way in the back. And that's where I usually go. And time again, that's been the trick. So we were back there, pulling around, looking, head on a swivel, and we start to see some birds, but they're not doing the full-fledged redfish school thing. They're doing what they do in the early spring, but it's nuanced, and so it might sound like I'm getting too deep into the weeds, and maybe I am, but here's the thing. We're dealing with baby shrimp right now. That's what's in the marsh. That is what rules the day right now. That and crabs. Now, I heard the crab hatch, the Bite Me podcast, they were saying that the crab hatch had happened down there where they're at. I don't know if it's happened for us yet. When that does happen, and you've got a bunch of little crabs and a bunch of little shrimp in the marsh, it just gets really good. And right now, I know for sure the shrimp are there. So when the shrimp are small, the smaller the shrimp, the slower the school moves. Because they're pushing a very skittish, small herd of shrimp around. And there's a bajillion of them. And so they're taking their time, gill flares, sucking them in as they move. The birds, because the shrimp are so tiny, they will do a circle, that they'll come down over the top of the fish, seagulls, and they'll pick up a shrimp or two, and then they'll peel off of that school and make a big circle and come back. Hit it again, peel off. They'll hover for a second, and then they'll peel off and make a circle. Those are things you got to look for. They're probably on redfish. If they're coming down and they're staying low, that seagull will hover for just a second, and then he'll dive and pick up. It's different than what they're going to do over the top of trout. It just is. When they're up on the top of trout, they don't do the huge circle thing. They kind of stay up 10, 12 feet in the air, 15 feet in the air, and then they dive, come right back up. there's not a whole lot of this circling motion. And then later, as the shrimp get bigger, the fish, the schools are going to move faster. Physically, they're moving from one place to another a lot quicker. They're harder to catch up to. And the shrimp, as they get bigger, the birds are going to form that tight, low-flying pattern where it's just so super easy to look 200 yards across the marsh and be able to tell if it's redfish or trout. So we looked up, saw birds working, and off we went. And it had, I mean, we've been dealing with a slow winter pattern. It's been a bit of a grind out there, and we were both really excited. So I'm on the platform, Chris is on the bow, and he's getting first shot, but we decided we were going to 1-2-3 it, meaning we're both going to throw on the count of three and try to double up. Well, sometimes when you do that and you don't have a really good bird action where they're really pointing to where the school is, two different anglers may have two different ideas of where that school is. Now, in reality, a lot of times that school is a lot bigger than what you think it is. And so you might both be right. For whatever reason this occurred, Chris threw out, I threw out, and I hooked up. And then he had the worst, he had the, I'm getting ahead of myself. I reel in my fish, take a picture, let it go. And then there's another school working 30 yards from us, within casting distance almost. I get back on the platform and maneuver us, point us around, and Chris's pole and line are tangled up like you wouldn't believe. Like the kind of tangle that only happens when a fish is in front of you. It looked like it had a bunch of hatchet knots in it, but he ended up getting it out. I tried for a minute. I couldn't get it out. So we don't catch any fish on that school, but there's two other schools in this back lake going off at the same time. I've been watching them, and I've been trying to hurry and get us over there because I'm worried they're going to die off. We've been watching them school for 15 minutes now. And we get over there, and Chris caught a fish, and then I caught another fish. I can't remember what happened, but in this back lake, we saw schools of 100 redfish strong. I mean, huge schools of redfish. Chris had four redfish on, and all of them came unbuttoned. And that was another one of those. I think we were both so excited, but that the spring pattern had kicked off, that we were like just giddy. And so we had ended the day with eight fish on the end of our line, and I think only four or five of them made it in the boat. But still, not a terrible day. And then, you know, I'm starting to run paying trips this week. I've got a trip tomorrow and a trip Friday. And I told you we were going to have one more little cold snap, just a little front that pushes through, and that I thought it was going to be a northeast wind and that it wouldn't dump the marsh. Well, I was wrong. We had a northwest wind, and at times went to west northwest, and it blew all the water out of the marsh. All of it. So that is very upsetting to me because I had the pattern figured out. I knew exactly what it was going to be for the next 2 or 3 weeks. I knew where to go and what to do. And now I'm starting back from the drawing board, but here's what you have to remember. I've been through this a few times, and so I'll kind of tell you what I think is going to happen, and then we'll see what actually does happen. So not all of the shrimp are going to fall out of the marsh when it dumps like that. Now, it dumped hard. It did not leave very much water back there at all. Some places went totally dry. But the shrimp that are hatching now, they anchor themselves down to the bottom in the mud. And some of them will be able to withstand that tide suck, and they'll anchor down to the bottom. And even if it gets down to a couple of inches deep, they'll hang out there as the water comes back up. Now, the birds will have their heyday on them while... Have you ever seen birds going nuts and you get up there to see what's going on and it's almost dry? There's like just puddles and maybe a couple inches of water in a little lake or a pond. That's all the stuff that stayed. That's the shrimp and the baby crabs and all the stuff that stayed back there. So there's going to be a ton of that. And then all that water is going to start pushing back in. I watched it very closely today. It started to push its way back in. It's still not there. We still have relatively low water levels, but we've got an incoming in the morning. Well, it might even be overnight. I can't remember now. But I think what's going to happen is if you can just get back to the shallowest water you can get to, which is probably going to be an area that you've been running over to get to the back, those little pocket marshes and areas that are staged up close to deep water are going to have shrimp and they're going to have redfish. The bigger redfish are going to go as far as they can comfortably go to the back. Because they like to crawl. They like to crawl in the mud and suck those shrimp in. They're stalkers. The younger redfish, some of them will stalk that way, but some of those younger redfish will fall out into the big open lakes and the deeper areas, you know, 2.5, 3 feet deep, and they will mix, intermingle with the trout, and you probably will see some trout working in those big open areas, and there's going to be a ton of shrimp in those places for the next day or two. And then the tide is going to help those shrimp go back in the back. Now, why do I say help instead of push? The shrimp want to be in the marsh right now. I know they seem like little shrimp and they don't really have much of a mind, but they want to be in the marsh. That's their nursery. That's where they grow up. It's nature's plan. It's God's way for them to live in the marsh until they get big enough to leave. And whether they hunker in the mud or whether they allow the tide to drag them out, it's part of the natural cycle of life. And so I think that when the water levels come back up, you're going to see exactly what was happening last week. You're going to see birds working. You're going to see big schools of redfish. Until then, we're looking for crawlers in the morning. I'm looking for crawlers, and I'm going to try to time it to where we catch some morning action up shallow in the marsh. And, you know, I'm going to go pretty far to the west. And then around about 9:30, or 9:45, I think the action will probably die off just a little bit. We'll get that morning lull. And when that happens, I'm going to pack it up and I'm going to head east and get closer to the Galveston Rail Bridge where the tide is going to hit it first, because I don't want to deal with that little slack back into the tide, because it's going to happen right in the middle of the major. I don't want to be way up in the marsh in the major, because it's going to coincide with the slack tide. So I need to go east to catch moving water during the major. And I think that's going to help us catch fish. And I think the wind is going to allow me to do that tomorrow. So we will see what transpires in that instance. I finished all the reels I was working on. I took Chris's reel apart further than I've ever taken a reel apart before. I replaced the anti-reverse bearing, and every bearing on the reel, with the exception of the spool bearing, and that's because I couldn't get the pin out. I even bought a fancy little pin puller, and it bent the tip of my pin puller. It wouldn't come out. So I don't know if it's just rusted in there or what. But every other bearing got replaced, and it's looking good. Big shout out to Mike at Anglers Anonymous, because I had questions and they didn't have a part that I needed. And he pointed me to the parts distributor that they use, that they buy their parts from. And I called those folks, and it was super easy. He took my order over the phone, shipped me a box of parts for those reels. And I'm going to call him back probably tomorrow or the next day and order a few more parts just to keep them on hand in case I have a breakdown. So that was very helpful. He didn't have to do that. Speaking of vendors and businesses that do a great job, my power pole isn't working. It just stopped. I get lights. I know it has power, but it is doing nothing. And so I've got two trips in the next 2 days, and then weekend, and then Wednesday, we leave for Matagorda Island, going down to Port O'Connor. So I don't have a whole lot of time to leave my boat in the shop. So I call the boatyard. I talk to Mark over there. Mark's the service manager. He's the guy that takes care of all the boats in there for service. And I, you know, ring, he picks up. I said, "Hey, Mark, what's going on? This is Matt Parrish." He says, "Hey, Matt, what's going on?" Because he knows me by name. When I go in there, like, they remember faces, remember names. I feel like I'm talking to a buddy. I said, "Man, listen, power pole's not working. Here's what it's doing." Actually, I said, "My power pole's not working." And I said, "I don't know when I'm going to be able to get the boat in. I'm running trips. I just need to kind of figure out how long this process is going to take, because I'm leaving on a trip with the boat and all this stuff." He goes, "Tell me what it's doing." I said, "Well, I get lights. I'm pretty sure it's got power, but no action at all." He said, "Yep, that's going to be the motherboard. If you'll send me a picture of the nameplate on the bottom of the base of the power pole where it's mounted, I'll order you a new one. I'll call you when it gets here. You can swing in and we'll put it in." I was like, "Dude, you are the best." And so to make it even better, I wasn't down at the Bay House. I was at my house in Houston, and he's telling me to get a picture. Well, I just so happened, the guy that I'm fishing with tomorrow is a longtime friend that lives in Michigan, and him and his family are down and they're staying at my place. And so I called him and I'm like, "Dude, can you take a picture of this?" So he's trying to find the nameplate. He can't find it. And he's like a guy who would know where to look for that kind of stuff. And so he sends me the picture where it's supposed to be. It's not there. It's 6 o'clock in the evening. I'm texting back and forth with Mark, sending him pictures going, "Dude, it's not there. It's not there. Where else should we look?" He's like, "Send me the picture of the front of the little actuator motor. And it looks like your nameplate sticker must have fallen off. But don't worry about it. I'm going to get you one ordered in here anyway. I'll let you know when it's here." Done. Dude, you can't beat that. You cannot beat that. That is fantastic customer service. So he saved me a lot of days of, dropping the boat off, coming back and getting it. Now I'm just going to roll in there. If I got to leave it, I'll leave it for a day. I'll go do something down in that neck of the woods and come back and pick it up. So big shout out to them for doing that. So I should be ready for this trip next week. Chris is coming over early. We're going to record a podcast together, Lord willing, that will air next Thursday. And then we're taking off to go to Port O'Connor and stay with Scott Wednesday night. And then we're getting up at the crack of dawn and going to Matagorda Island to set up camp and fish all day. So I still have not asked Scott if he will be on my podcast. So that's a minor detail. I'm planning on bringing the rig down there and trapping him into an interview, but I am going to ask him before we go. And so I hope that works out. That'll be really cool. If you are going out on Thursday, which would be tomorrow, you should better plan on hunting around the front edges of the marsh and any place that you have water. You're going to be fishing places you normally run over to get where you normally want to be. And that's okay. And you better move extra slow if you want to catch those crawlers. And you better throw something small and don't drop it in right on their noggin because you're going to scare them away. Fish are going to get spooky. It's after a high wind event. The wind's going to calm down a hair. The next 2 days, we're going to have low water and spooky fish. So I hope we end up having some schools in the back, but you never know. This event may have weirded them out for a couple of days. So if it doesn't happen in the next 2 days, you can bet by day 3 or 4, the tide's going to start to come back up and life in the back will get back to normal. I am fishing the GRS tournament on Saturday. Here's the kicker. I normally fish it with my 17-year-old Reed, one of the twins. He's pretty easy to fish with. He can handle himself. He's not, you know, adult good yet, but he's getting there. He can't fish. He's going on a college visit. So I opened my mouth and told the 9-year-old Benjamin that he should take his spot. And Benjamin is a very smart kid, and he can handle himself with a spinning rod in a decent kind of way. But it's been a good minute since it's probably been since the fall, since he's been out there. But as soon as I said he could take Reed's spot and we were going to fish this tournament together, he got so excited. So I have to fish it with him now, which is going to be fun, but I feel like I'm going to spend whatever it's going to cost us to get in the tournament. And it will basically be me paying for a fishing trip that I could have taken him on for free, because I don't think we're going to place, but you never know. I mean, if the fish are schooling on Saturday, I can put him in front of a school of fish and he can throw out and hit a school. So who knows? Maybe we'll get lucky. Anyway it goes, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing all my friends at the tournament. And I am so thankful that spring is here. If you're going on the Matagorda Island trip with the Salty Yak Pack, and you are going in a boat, email me, emptystringers@gmail.com. Just trying to put together a plan and help carry out. I know he's trying to figure out what boats are going to be there and what we're going to carry and all that stuff. So we're going to come back up to the launch on Friday morning and help those guys with some cargo. And I'm just trying to see what all we're dealing with here. So appreciate that. Let's get into our Bible tidbit. Okay, I'm re-recording the Bible tidbit because I've rambled on like forever just a second ago when I tried to do it. So let me see if I can be a little more succinct this time. I have a verse I want to read to you, and then we're going to talk about it. I'm in 1 John chapter 2. I'm going to start in verse 2. It says, "He," talking about Jesus, "is the propitiation for our sins," meaning he is the fulfillment of God's wrath, the payment for our sin. "And not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. And by this we know that we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. Whoever says, 'I know him,' but does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way which he walked." Let's unpack that. Let me tell you what it's not saying first. It's not saying that if you sin at all, that you are not a Christian. Even Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, says in Romans, "I do the things I don't want to do, and I don't do the things I want to do. And it's the sin nature inside me that's doing those things. And he's frustrated about it. But here's the key. He's frustrated about it. A real Christian is not perfect. That's why we needed a sacrifice on the cross. But a real Christian cares about the sin that he's committing or living in, and he wants to honor God with the way that he lives. So many of us believe that because we are in the South and because we grew up in a, you know, quote unquote Christian family, that we're Christians. Or that because we prayed this prayer when we were 6 years old, or we got baptized as a baby, or whatever the case may be, that we're Christians. That's not true. That's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches an active, ongoing relationship with God Almighty through Jesus Christ. And in that, we are being sanctified over time. Sanctification is the process by which we're made holy. And I'll give away the secret at the end. We're never going to get to be holy until the day that we get the new body in the new heaven and all that good stuff. We're not going to be perfect while we're on earth. You're going to make mistakes, but God is always revealing that next part of the old you that's being whittled away, that part of your sin nature that's being carved and cut away, making you new over time. That's the process you should be in and care about, and you should walk, at least attempt to walk in a way that honors God because you love him. If you don't care about any of that, you're probably not a Christian. Or maybe you're listening and you felt that twinge inside and you went, oh, I know what he's talking about, but I've gotten so far away. Listen, it's not too late. Surround yourself with a local church and don't show up and do nothing. Show up and volunteer. That's the way to form relationships. So show up and be like, hey, what do y'all need me to do? If you show up every Sunday and sit in the pew and when it's over you leave, you're never going to grow friends there. You're never going to get involved and put some roots down. And don't look for a perfect church. They don't exist. If there was one and you walked in the door, it wouldn't be perfect anymore. So my encouragement to you is just go, look, what's your heart saying? Do you care about those things? Do you really know him? If you know him, you'll keep his commandments. You'll attempt to. You're going to fail at it over and over and over again, but you keep coming back and going, God, I'm sorry. I screwed this up. Help me. Help me walk in a way that honors you. That's what a real Christian does. So I say that to go, hey, let's be real and honest with ourselves about who we are and what we are. And don't have a false sense of security in thinking that because you were baptized when you were, you know, 10 days old, or that you went to vacation Bible school when you were in kindergarten, that you're saved and you're a Christian. That's now, though you may be a Christian and those things may have happened, but you are not a Christian because of those things. So, yeah. And if all that confuses you and you don't have a clue where to go from wherever you're at, shoot me an email. If I can't help you, I'll put you in touch with folks that can. I appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. Go buy you some Kevin's Outside Custom Painted Baits at Fish Sticks. If you're fishing the GRS this weekend, good luck. Email me at emptystringers@gmail.com. Follow me at empty_stringers on Instagram. You would think I'd get this right by now. And then on TikTok @emptystringers. I'm going fishing tomorrow, guys. Hope y'all are too. Catch them up.